Well, hello everyone. This is Julia McCutcheon, and I'd like to welcome you all to this Ask the Author teleseminar interview with my special guest, Jackie Holder, who's going to talk to us about the five writing techniques that all writers should know. So a very warm welcome to you, Jackie.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. Thanks, Julia.
Thank you. So I just have one announcement that I would like to make, and that is that these bi-monthly Ask the Author calls are open to the general public. But they're also a free benefit to you if you're working with me on my mentor program or if you're part of the Preparing for Publishers Masterclass coaching group. And if you're interested to find out more about either of those programs, you can do so on my website at juliamccutcheon.com. Okay, so I'm going to move straight on now to introducing my special guest, Jackie Holder. Now, I first met Jackie about 5 years ago, and we were at that time co-presenting a workshop called Publish Your Book. And we did this event along with two other colleagues once a year in London for several years, and it was a hugely popular and really successful event. And Jackie made an incredibly strong impression on me right from the very start with her genuine passion for writing and her ability to inspire writers to engage with the whole writing process, as well as to work really creatively with the words on the page. So since that time, I've remained really deeply impressed with Jackie's charismatic and authentic approach to writing generally. So I'm really delighted to have the opportunity to interview her now on this really important topic of how to produce your very best quality writing using these tried and tested techniques. Now, Jackie is the author of a book called Soul Purpose, and works as a life executive and creativity coach. And if you want to contact Jackie about working with her individually, her email address is jackieholder@aol.com. And I'll just spell that for you. That's jackieholder@aol.com. So Jackie, I'm going to hand over to you now and just invite you to tell us all a little bit about your writer's journey so far and perhaps also a bit more about your current work and your writing activities.
Well, first of all, Julia, thanks very much for that wonderful introduction. It's great to be here on the call. So just to start off with a little bit about my own writing journey. I wrote and published, my first book was published in 1999, Soul Purpose. And that marked a really defining moment for me as a writer, because it was obviously when my book was published. But before that, I had taken some time to work up to really considering myself to be a writer, even though I didn't have a published book out in the world. Mm. I used to love writing poetry. I used to do a lot of writing in my work as a trainer, delivering workshops, seminars, and courses in the local authority that I worked in the private training and consultancy work that I did. And I remember, certainly from my school days, that I loved subjects like history and English, where we had to write stories or put projects together. And I just used to love to allow myself to indulge in writing. I really found it a really good way of expressing myself, probably expressing myself in a way that I didn't always do in the way that I said things or the way I communicated verbally. Writing felt like a very safe space for me to be more myself on the page. And I really held on to my love of words, my love of books. I'm a very addictive reader, a lot of non-fiction work. I did used to read a lot of fiction, but I don't read as much fiction anymore. I tend to focus a lot of my energies in the areas that I really want to write in. And so I'm always reading books on creativity and other books on writing. I love memoirs. And so my love of reading and writing led me to this place in 1999 where I felt it was time for me to tell my own story. I'd been inspired by a lot of other people's stories, particularly women's stories. And I particularly wanted to write a book that would be inspirational, motivating, confident building for women around their own lives and what they wanted to do in their lives. And so that's why I put Soul Purpose together.
Wonderful.
And since the publication of Soul Purpose, I've been writing quite prolifically in my own business as a coach and as a trainer, from anything from essays to articles to putting workbooks together to putting programs together. I absolutely love putting programs together. I love thinking about great exercises to use. I love thinking and generating and collecting some of the best quotes that are around. And I really just really find the best way to use words to build and inspire others to be true to their calling, be true to their purpose, and to be true to the words that they put on the page.
That's really lovely. Thanks for that, Jackie. And what about the work that you actually do with writers? Because you do coach writers specifically as well as your more kind of general writing work, don't you? Tell us a little bit more about that.
I do that on two levels. I work as an executive coach and a creativity coach and as a life coach. And I do lots of one-to-one work with people who are interested in writing and want to get started, or maybe they've got a story that they want to share and they're not sure where to start, what's the first thing to do. I've had individuals who have been published, who have been working on their second book, who are not feeling as confident or maybe feeling a bit stuck on how to kind of get moving on it, or perhaps they've got a deadline approaching. I also had somebody who won a major, who came second in a major competition, fiction writing competition on a daytime TV program, and we worked on her getting that book written, getting it off to the publishers, and set her on course for her third book, and I think she's actually on her fourth book now.
Wow, that's a great success story.
Yeah, so my coaching work is where I can do the one-to-one work around nurturing the writer in terms of their practice, their craft, moving through blocks, dealing with anything that's getting in the way of the writing, and actually getting the work done. And then I do my writing workshops. I've been doing writing workshops for many, many years. That's probably something that it's probably my most favourite of all my workshops, is putting together a creative writing workshop and delivering that to groups from all walks of life. And then over in South London, which is where I live, I do a monthly moon rights writing group for women. We do it on the full moon, or as close to the full moon as we possibly can. We like to see that or think of the moon as being our muse, for women taking time out of their daily lives to return to themselves, return to their writing. And it's just a wonderful space of creative, for women to get the creative juices flowing.
Wonderful. That sounds really excellent. And I know, having presented workshops with you before, Jackie, that you are a truly gifted presenter and a very kind of charismatic presenter, which is lovely. So I'm sure that if anyone gets any chance to go on any of the workshops that you run, they would enjoy it enormously and get a great benefit from it. And I think that your capacity to inspire writers to really, as I said earlier, engage with the writing on the page, it's that kind of on-the-page gift that you seem to really bring forth in people, which is really, really lovely to see. Okay, so let's move on to our topic then, and perhaps we could start off, Jackie, by asking you to introduce, first of all, what the five writing techniques are, and then obviously we'll go back and talk through each one in a bit more detail. So could you just give us a quick intro to each one, and just a very brief summary so that we know what to expect?
Okay, that's fine, yep. So we'll start off with technique number one is outlining your writing. And looking at this technique, we're going to look at how to capture your best ideas using mind mapping and brainstorming techniques. So it's really about how to get started, that first point of generating your ideas. Then we're going to move on and look at technique number two, which we called fast-tracking your writing. And that is about how do you take those ideas and then extend them into generating some writing? And how do you ensure that you don't get stuck with when you come up against blocks, but you actually move through those blocks or move around them or over them and keep the writing flow going? Then we're going to move on to technique number three, which is speaking your writing. And with that particular technique, I particularly want to look at how we both hear and respond and actually express a much more authentic writer's voice that really reflects our writing to say what we really mean it to say. So rather than sounding like somebody else, we want to look at how can you sound more like yourself on the page. Okay. Technique number four is going in deep with your writing. And I particularly want to introduce the listeners to seven principles of deep writing, which are based on the principles outlined by creativity coach and psychotherapist Eric Maisel in his book Deep Writing. I particularly have taken these principles on board because I think they really do help the writer get clarity around what they're writing, why they're writing it, is it what they're really writing about, are they really writing about and saying what they mean in their writing, and how to balance taking your writing out into the commercial world.
Great.
And then we're going to finish up with technique number five, which is wrapping up your writing. It's just really some thoughts and tips on how to finish and complete a piece of writing. We say here with relative ease. It's not always easy, but I'd like to think that with these techniques, it will make it easier.
Yeah, that's great. And I think we all know that sometimes it's really hard to know when to stop, because you can carry on tweaking and refining and polishing, and whether it's fiction or non-fiction, actually knowing when to draw the line is quite an important part of the process, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it stops many people getting their work out into the world or sharing it with other people, because they allow the fear of how other people may perceive their work, how it will be received, and they convince themselves that they have to keep on editing, they have to keep on revising, when actually you can just use these techniques to just put a full stop, draw a line under it, share it, and deal with what comes back after that.
Yeah, indeed. And learning also to let go of your writing is part of that process, I think.
Yeah.
That's quite a big step for many, many writers, getting to the point of actually releasing it to the world, even if it's just a small circle of friends and family, or if it's beyond that out into the world in a commercial way. Actually learning to let go is another part of the journey too. So wonderful. Well, I know we've got lots of great information to cover. So let's move straight in then to discussing technique number one in more detail, what you call outlining your writing. So that's all about capturing your best ideas and using mind mapping and brainstorming techniques. So that sounds really intriguing. So tell us a little bit more about this technique, Jackie.
Okay, so you want to write a story, you have an idea for a story, you have an idea for an article or an essay, and you've got the blank page or the computer screen in front of you. More likely with the mind mapping and the brainstorming, most people find it much better to use a blank sheet of paper. And you're thinking, okay, now how do I get started? And I have used both of these techniques considerably over the last few years to begin to outline my work, to kind of think about, okay, what do I want to say in it? And in a way, we're drawing on the technique of free association. We're saying, okay, I'm not going to put limits on what I think about. I'm just going to write down whatever comes to me. So I want you to imagine you've got a blank sheet of paper in front of you. In the middle of the sheet of paper, you write down either the heading for your story or the heading for your article or whatever it is you want to write, and you put that in the middle of the page. And then you're going to free associate by drawing lines coming out from the edge of the circle. And you're going to just write down as much as you can about the thoughts and ideas that come into your mind about what you could possibly include in this story. You might begin to outline all the different things that this story is about. You might start to say who your characters are, where the setting is, what's going to be happening, who's involved in it, the story continues to. And it doesn't matter if it doesn't make sense to you right at this point. You're just capturing down whatever it is that comes into your mind. The same with an article or an essay. You come up with as many points or themes or topics that you want to cover under that particular heading. Now, some people are great with mind mapping. Some people use different colours even as they're doing it, because some people find that really helps to really get the brain, but particularly the bright brain, which is the home of our creativity and our ideas. Really helps to get that kind of juicy and flowing. Mm-hmm. But some people are equally comfortable with kind of brainstorming. And the brainstorm is very much using a similar technique, but this way we're kind of using a list form. So you're kind of using your headers, using your storyline, but you're writing down in the list form, and you're just allowing yourself to free flow with that list and get down as many ideas as you possibly can in much the same way as you do with your mind map.
So the principles are the same for both techniques, aren't they? It's really still on the basis of free association. It's just whichever way you prefer that feels right for you. I mean, if you're perhaps a more visual person, you might want to use the mind mapping technique. And, you know, I love the idea of using different colours for things. I'm somebody who always have different coloured pens to use for things. And I think that actually can be really, really helpful.
Yes.
But it's equally powerful to use the brainstorming technique, as you say, to use that list approach, but it's still based on this free association of ideas, isn't it?
Definitely. And I'd like to share another quick tip that I often use when I'm writing on the move. So I might be getting a train into central London to do a day's piece of work, and as I'm sitting on the train, an idea comes to me, but I might not have the time to begin writing that piece. So what I'll do is I'll quickly brainstorm and create a list of all the different things I might want to say in that piece. And then I have it there to go back to when I'm ready to start the writing. And I find that extremely helpful. So it means that ideas are captured and they're anchored onto the page. And I'm generating material that I can then use for my writing practice when I'm ready to sit down and dedicate a more substantial amount of time to get started with the writing.
That's brilliant. And I think that certainly for all writers, getting into the habit of carrying around a notebook and a pen, certainly I do, and I know you do too, Jackie, it's a great habit to get into, because you just never know when those ideas are going to pop up, do you?
I don't go anywhere without my notebook, absolutely anywhere. Even when I go on my walks, I have a little pouch, and I actually carry index cards in my little pouch that I had around my waist or around my shoulder. And I got that tip from a great writer. Her name's Anne Lamont, and she's written many books on writing, and one particular book is called Bird by Bird. And she talks about going out on her walks, and she takes index cards. She tucks them into the back pockets, or she tucks them into her pockets, because ideas are always coming to her when she's walking. Mm. Walking is another way that writers actually find is a really good way for generating ideas, or
absolutely
allowing ideas to be worked through in their heads. And you just never know what you're going to see on your walk. You just never know what you're going to think about. So in a way, you've always got your materials there. So if it's not a notebook, you've got your index card there. And I've just generated so many pieces of writing that have come off of index cards.
That's a really great idea. And just picking up on the point you made about walking, I think one of the things about movement, whether it be walking, or I do yoga actually, or any kind of rhythmical movement like walking or yoga, is a way of really releasing kind of deep kind of memories and ideas from the very core of the body, getting those muscles moving. And I think a lot of writers celebrated over the years, many, many years, have used walking as a practice where they actually go for a walk to mull over the ideas as a way of moving the body and stimulating and triggering the unconscious and the conscious mind. So
absolutely. Because if you think about it, Aborigines go on walkabout. The Native Americans went on vision quests. Christians and Muslims make pilgrimage. Walking has been a practice that the ancestors have done, because they've known the value not only to the creative process but to the inner self. And in a way, when you're writing, what you're doing is you're deepening your connection to your inner self. And I am amazed that I have actually, through a walk or a run, gone from start to the finish of what I want to include in an article.
Wow.
Sometimes I cannot wait till I stop to kind of get things down. And it's a beautiful feeling when you know that your mind is so brilliant that it can just come up with all of these ideas and put them all into the right slots for you.
Yeah, that's fabulous. Great. Well, I'm sure we could say lots more about that, but so that we have kind of time to fit everything else in, I'm going to move us on then to the next step, which is really technique number two. So once you've actually captured your best ideas, technique number two is about fast-tracking your writing. And now I know that many, many people have ideas about what they want to write about, but actually do get stuck with not really knowing properly how to start. So it'd be great if you could share some tips and techniques for aspiring writers, or even writers who are already published but then feel stuck in getting started on the next project or the next book, or even writing articles or whatever it is. So what about fast tracking your writing, Jackie?
Well, this is a particular technique that definitely works, and I've used it for absolute years in writing workshops, and it's always amazing to see it in practice. You have people who are seasoned, you have people who have written books before. It doesn't mean that they don't get to a place where they don't feel stuck. Fast-tracking your writing is a technique where you are given a title. So normally you give a writing prompt. So in workshops, I have hundreds and hundreds of writing prompts. It could be anything from a sentence to just one word on a page. And you invite people to pick a prompt, or you give a prompt, a general prompt to the whole group, and you give a specific time that you suggest that people are going to write for. So you might say 10 minutes, you may say 15 minutes, you may say 20 minutes. And then you set up the formula or the frame for the writing to happen in. And what you say to the group is you say, okay, we want you to write for 10 minutes, for 15 minutes, for 20 minutes, and we want you to write as fast as you can around this topic or this theme or this word or this sentence. Now, the idea is that you start off perhaps writing down your thoughts about the particular prompt that you've been given, but you don't need to stay with it. But the idea is that you keep yourself, your writing, your pen on the page, and you keep it moving as fast as you possibly can. So you don't stop to think about how you're structuring your sentences, your grammar, how you're saying things, the part, the pace, the rhythm, whether the story is making sense, whether you've got the right character in there. You don't stop to think about any of that. You just simply keep your pen moving across the page. Now, that can also mean saying things like, I don't know what I want to say here. I find this topic really difficult. You actually can write down your thoughts. So you don't just stop because you don't feel you're writing around a specific theme or you're really getting to the point of what you want to say. You can also use the fast writing to voice your thoughts on the page. Mm-hmm. But the idea is you just keep going as fast as you can. Now, there's a reason for that. I can think back to school where actually when we were doing English comprehension or you're writing an essay, you were constantly interrupted by the teacher telling you about nouns, about verbs, about putting full stops in, make sure your spelling's right. And that would often interrupt your flow because you're so busy trying to get this piece to this polished, perfect place. The creativity and flow that often the right brain is really wanting to take you to is interrupted. Now, the other thing that happens is that our censor and our critic is particularly alive, particularly when we're in our adult phases. And the critic actually likes to go really slow. It likes to stop and wander and dawdle and get you to think about whether you've got all of these things in place. And it can be almost bring out its school teacher's voice and say to you, well, you know, Jackie, you know, that sentence isn't very well phrased, is it? Or, Jackie, come on, your spelling is so terrible there. Yeah. And you can stop to kind of mull over that. And that can actually bring you to a place of actually stopping. And what we want to do with this particular technique is to just show you that actually if you just allow yourself to keep writing, you just don't know what you will write. You might be amazed at what you write. Yeah. And there's a writer whose work I really love. She wrote a book called One Continuous Mistake, which I think is a great title for a book around writing. And she has these four noble truths of writing. And one of them is that writers write. And with the fast track in your writing, I think what writers often learn very quickly in writing workshops is that you have to have a writing practice. Yeah. And fast tracking your writing gives really clear evidence to writers that actually they may have thought in their head, I can't do this, I haven't got anything to say, my writing's not great. But actually, by just taking on board this technique, they get to see that actually they can develop a practice really quickly, really simply, and really easily. Mm. And that they can embody the practice of writer's write.
That's great.
That then takes them very quickly to her second principle, which is you don't know what your writing will be until the end of the process. So with the fast tracking, you're not thinking about where you're going. You're just in the process. You're in the moment. You're present with the writing. You're not thinking about the end result. You're just there.
That's really important, isn't it?
Yeah. And then the third principle is the only way to fail is not to write. And then the fourth principle is writing the process, and we'll develop those a bit more as we go on to the other techniques.
Wonderful.
So that's what we mean by fast-tracking. It's sometimes called spontaneous writing, rapid writing. There's lots of other names that people give to it, but that's basically what it is.
Lovely. That's great. Thank you, Jackie. So there's a kind of a real process starting to emerge here, with starting off with the, you know, the outlining in terms of capturing your ideas, and then the fast-tracking, which is really getting those words onto the page without an attachment to the end result. And what about, I mean, you've touched on this a little bit, but would you say that this is also a really strong technique for moving through writer's block if people feel that they are genuinely blocked and want to move through writer's block? This sounds like a great technique for moving through that as well.
It gives absolute evidence immediately that writer's block is often more in our head than it is in the actual reality of writing.
Indeed, yeah.
Writers prove to themselves very, very quickly. And in a way, I love it because, you know, I can spend a whole workshop going into the whys of a block. But actually, what, one of the things that I am learning and embracing in my practice as a writer is that I have a number of blocks as a writer, but that doesn't mean I don't write.
Mm.
I write despite of my blocks. I write in spite of my blocks.
Yes.
I write with my blocks.
Yes.
And actually, that has been a real, that's been very enlightening for me, because I think before I often didn't finish writing, produce writing, because I was so focused on what those blocks were.
Mm-hmm.
It was about being, you know, rejection around a writer, people criticizing or not liking my writing, or, you know, experiences when you were younger around your writing, or what somebody would have said about your writing.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, we can write despite of our blocks. And I think that is something that when you see writers out there being published, it isn't that they don't have blocks. I don't think they create monuments for their blocks.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think anything that we focus on and that we concentrate on becomes much bigger because we're really giving our energy to it. Whereas if we actually accept that there are going to be moments in the writing cycle where we're going to feel less productive, we're not perhaps going to be quite so inspired on the ideas front, but we still write anyway without the attachment to the end result, as you've just been saying, then we can actually just keep the writing flowing, and the quality will come back. And that actually kind of raises a question that was actually sent in prior to this call, which has come from Emma Riddle. So thanks for sending that in, Emma. And she says that there are times when I'm writing and it's all flowing really well and I'm very enthusiastic. However, there are other times when the words have to be dragged onto the page and everything I write seems dull and drab. So do you have any advice on how to lift my writing on those dull and drab days? And that kind of ties into what I was just alluding to there with the writing cycle. So what comments can you share with us on that, Jackie?
Well, I think that's a great question that Emma has posed. And the first thing I just kind of want to acknowledge, that I don't know if this is true, but I get a sense that Emma is actually committed to her practice and she's doing her writing practice.
Yeah.
And she's doing the first thing that Gail Sher talks about is writer's write. She's doing that anyway.
Mm.
The second point to make is that actually, you know, there are cycles and there are seasons to the practice of writing, to the practice of honouring our creativity. Very much like the seasons of the year in terms of spring, summer, autumn and winter. There are times when we are going to be planting the seeds for our writing. We're going to be generating the ideas. We're going to be starting the different stages of the writing, particularly if we're thinking about, oh, I really want to write about this aspect of it. We'll be starting it. And then we'll often come to a place where the writing is not as full. A bit like the autumn months where, you know, the seasons are about shedding, about letting go, about hibernating. And we all have lulls in the writing process. And writing well doesn't always mean that we're writing all the time. And I think it's really important that writers begin to be very aware and also honour the different stages and processes that are included in the writing process.
Mm.
And to acknowledge that sometimes we need to allow our work to simmer for a bit. and that we can take ourselves out on walks. We can actually give ourselves time to go off on artist dates where we create opportunities for ourselves to fill up our creative well. So we're given so much to the writing that we have to remember that we need to regenerate, that we need to feed ourselves,
really
that we need
important.
To get fed,
yes.
In terms of our own creativity, in terms of feeding our senses as well.
Yeah.
And also on an artist date, you're also giving yourself an opportunity to make a deeper connection with yourself. You're actually going deeper into yourself. When I go off and I listen to a music concert, it's amazing what that will tap into in terms of my own writing when I return to the page. The same if I go wandering through, walking or running through my local park, just being with nature, just allowing myself to enjoy the sensation of all the different colours that I happen to be open to in the springtime, the different colours that are there in the summer, the different colours that are there in the autumn. All of that is fuel for my writing practice.
Definitely.
So what I'd say to Emma is really to know that, give your writing time to work itself out. Trust that you're not always having to write all the time. It also may be a time to work on different projects. Sometimes I move from one project to another one because I don't always have the same energy, but I might have it if I start working on something else. So in one day, you could see me jump from one project to another.
Good idea, yes. And it's amazing how working on different projects actually draws on different parts of your own inspiration. And as you rightly say, that you may feel a little bit dried up on one project and then you switch to something else later in the day and actually all of a sudden it kind of floods back again. So that's great. Yeah, and it is a really important point about inspiration, isn't it? We do need to kind of replenish those inner resources and make a conscious point to do that on a regular basis, because otherwise we're just putting so much energy out into the world if we never kind of replenish that well inside. And whatever it is that actually inspires you as a writer, and I think one of the important things that I talk to my clients also about is that it doesn't have to be, your creative expression doesn't have to be exclusively restricted to your writing. And as you're saying, Jackie, you know, enjoying music or dance or walking in nature, any of these things will just simply fire up your creative imagination and your inspiration. And that then spills over not just into your writing, actually, but into all areas of your life. And it's that constant cycle. But going back to the point that Emma was making, that there are some days when that inspiration isn't quite as strong, and actually that's okay. It's okay to accept that as part of the process and just to kind of keep going with it and not allow that to kind of suddenly build into a block that doesn't need to be there.
Can I just say one more point on this particular question as well? American choreographer, I just love this quote that she has, Twyla Tharp. She said, starting the work is not the same as beginning it, or the other way around. I never remember which way around. But basically, I have so embodied that, because basically she gives an example in this article already years ago. And she said, whenever she's going to start on a piece of choreography, she actually gets a box and she begins to put in that box different things that begin to inspire her with ideas around the piece that she's going to be developing. So she could do anything from go off and get, you know, 10 CDs that she thinks there might be something on one of these that kind of I might weave into this piece of dance. Or she might hear someone speak and just write down a couple of quotes. She might have gone out to eat something and seen something on the menu and dropped the menu in there because it's inspired her around some part of it. And she says for her, that's also part of starting the work on the dance.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes we're also doing that with our writing as well. We're not always doing all of the work on the page.
Very, very good point, and I couldn't agree more. I think that the more writers embrace that, the more rich their writing is actually going to become, and also the more enjoyable. And you know, one of my core principles with the writer's journey work is that it's so important to kind of enjoy the journey, and I think that that's going to really add to that enjoyment factor, bringing these different facets in. So lovely, that's great. Thank you, Jackie. So I'm going to move us on now then to technique number 3, which is all about speaking your writing. writing. And mm-hmm. I know that accessing your true writer's voice is obviously a very important topic for all writers. And what you are going to tell us about is about how to listen and hear and respond to your true writer's voice, which is like really yeah. important. So what can you share with us about that?
Well, I think first of all, I'd like to say, in terms of really beginning to bring a writer's voice onto the page, that is a much more accurate and authentic reflection of your own voice, I think that really, really does come from you writing as much as you can. Yeah. The more you write, the more you will begin to really tap into that voice, and it will begin to almost, it's almost as if it will begin to seep through the page. It will find its way onto the page, and you will hear it in the way that your writing sounds. And one of the ways you really get to really connect with that is by reading your work aloud. I noticed that in the early days I would write a piece, and it was almost as if as soon as I've written it, that's it. I didn't want to revise it. I didn't want to edit it. I didn't want to go back to it. I certainly didn't want to read it aloud. It was almost like this was, you know, just the fact that I've written it, that was enough for me. It was like, you know, surely they couldn't want anything more of me, this piece of writing. But I really didn't allow myself to gain something that is really, really crucial, is that the writer can hear very quickly whether they have captured, their words have been captured in the way that they want them to be by listening to the auditory sound of yeah. what they've written. And it's just such a simple but useful technique for us to use. Mm. And we know this technique because many of us, and you should be if you are a writer, you should be somebody who reads a lot. Because you will learn so much from reading other people's work, because your head will be nodding and bobbing, your body will be, your stomach will be gurgling, your glands will be sweating. If a writer is saying something and they're saying it in a way that is so authentic that you're going, yes, 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 yes. I know this, I understand this. Or even if you're saying, oh my God, I cannot believe you've just written that. I cannot believe the story has gone there. Whatever they are doing, it is activating, it is triggering something in you that is getting you to be in a conversation with them as well. Yes. And that's often because they've really activated and accessed that true writer's voice.
Yes.
And I want to give you... Sorry, Julia.
No, I was just going to say that one thing that just popped into mind when you were saying that is that when a writer is coming from that really deep, true, authentic place in themselves, not only does it show up on the page and that you can kind of resonate with that, it's in fact the resonance within you to your true authentic self
yeah.
that really kicks in. And that's where the yeah. most powerful writing, I think, comes from. It's when the writer is able to write from that deep true place within that actually triggers that resonance in you of that deep true place within. And that combination is such a powerful, as you rightly say, that rapport, that relationship between reader and writer, when that writer's voice is authentic, is kind of incredibly yeah. powerful.
And that, you know, those are that. That's it was for exactly that reason that I felt a surge of energy to write my first book, because I'd been reading many writers' work, particularly writers who came from my own heritage and background, like Alice Walker, Maya Angelou, Zenyan Mazan, who wrote stories that were. Some of it was about their own truth.
Yeah.
And that resonated with me at a very, very deep level. And that it started to kind of connect with my own story. And I thought, I really want to share this. And then when I started to share this in workshop, I thought, I really want to write this, because I really want to take it out to more people so more people can hear it. And then we can find that commonality that we often share at very, very deep levels of our lives, even though we might not look like each other, may not live on the same continent, might not do the same things, but those commonalities give us a human connection.
Very, very important too. And talking about this kind of deep, deep resonance, that beautifully leads us on actually to technique number four, which I'm really looking forward to hearing you talking more about. And this is all about going in deep with your writing and the seven principles of deep writing based on the work of Eric Maisel. So let's move on to that, because I know there's lots of wonderful things that you have to share with us on those seven principles of deep writing, which really is the next technique on from the speaking your writing that we've just been discussing.
Yeah, I just love it when I come across, new work. I've been reading Eric Maisel for quite a few years, and I'm always finding out about new work that he's done. And when I picked up deep writing, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is really makes sense. And so I'd like to introduce the seven principles that he introduces that are the principles of deep writing. The first one is called hushing the mind. And this is about where, as writers, we honour and we access the silence. And the silence is where we put out the intention that we're going to stop doing the busy work that the brain does, which he calls the second class work. So where, you know, we can probably get started on our writing, but it probably is not going to take us down as deep as where we're going to start really getting in touch with those stories that are the stories that probably we don't want to tell, or the stories we're a bit worried about unfolding on the page, whether that's fiction or not. And when we're going to really go into the silence and we're going to really hear our own voice, we're going to hear our own truth, we're going to access stories that have been buried, we're going to access thoughts and feelings that we want to bring to life on the page. And what Eric's suggesting in this principle is that we need to access this silence regularly, very, very often in our practice as writers. And writers do that anyway. Some do that by just taking themselves away. Writers like Toni Morrison go off and write. Mayer Angelou and Toni Morrison are both known for going into hotels and sitting in a room without any windows where they can just enter the silence, and that they find that that really allows them to deepen and go into their writing. Some writers, they actually do a practice of meditation before they actually start their writing. And I've actually found that that's really been helpful for me. You know, doing a practice, it doesn't take me very long. Sometimes it can be just as simple as 7 minutes of just doing some prayers or just doing some quiet meditative thoughts and reflection before I find myself on the page. And it breaks through the kind of critic and the censor voice and takes us beyond that.
That's really important. Yeah,
and I think that's what the silence done, because beyond the silence is a whole other world. And if we go back to Gail Scheer's Four Noble Truths of Writing, I think this is where the process, her fourth truth, writing as a process, really connects with hushing the mind. Because when you enter into that silence, that's where you really get to know and be in touch with the process of writing. Because it's through that silence, it's almost as if you're going to go through a process and you don't know where that process is going to take you.
Absolutely. And just one thing to add on that is that for me also, the silence is very much a gateway to your true self. And I think that hushing the mind, the kind of the chattering monkey mind, the everyday mind that's wrapped up in all of the issues that are part of our stories in life and all of that level of existence, when we're able to kind of gradually bring that whirlwind of thoughts to a stillness, and we do that through silence, then that is a really important gateway to our true selves, which then gives us access to this deep inspiration that you're sharing with us and talking to us about, as well as you rightly say, this whole kind of process that it allows the writing to lead us wherever we need to go with it, really. So I absolutely agree that the silence is a really important part of the whole process, and for me, I would kind of encourage and do encourage all of my clients to actually work with that process on a regular basis and try and introduce some silence, even if it's, as you say, 5-10 minutes. It's good enough actually to start with pretty much every day if you can, just to sit and be still and to be silent. And it's a really great way to start anything, actually, and certainly the whole writing process. So certainly that first principle, very important, would agree with that. So what about the second one?
So the second principle is holding the intention. And I found this, I think this is particularly useful because often it's a bit like thinking about, there's this Michael Gerber, he's got this, he wrote a book called The E-Myth, and he talks about working, not just working in your business, but working on your business. And I think of this particular principle very much like that. But sometimes as writers, we have to be able to extend ourselves to think about not just working and doing our writing, but working on our writing. And the idea behind the principle of holding the intention is that we're giving personal meaning to our writing. We're thinking about, you know, what holding the intention to write, turning up to our writing, and thinking about why we are writing or why we're writing the book or why we're writing this essay and what's our intention behind it. So it's setting the intention that you're going to write, and also pulling out the personal meaning from the writing. And I'd just like to use share a very quick example of that. Eric shares a very great example of a woman teacher who worked with students at in a secondary school who everyone had written off. And she always asked every year to teach these particular children. And she was also a writer herself. And she would teach them English, but she would actually get them to read these teenage crime novels by this writer every year. And these were young people who weren't great with their English. Everybody kind of saw them as, you know, would never be able to finish a novel. But she really found these novels gripping, and she would give them these novels to read, and they would not only read this novel, but they would come back to her for more. And over the years, she really saw a difference that these novels were having on these young people's lives. So she really got in touch with, actually, one holiday break, she decided to sit down and read every single one of the novels that this author had written. And she began to see the way in which they created the plot, the way in which they wrote. She listened to their voice. And she saw that there was a template to how they did this. And she thought, you know what, I really want to do this myself. And she decided that she was going to write a teenage crime novel. And then she told a couple of people. And one was somebody who was a writer themselves and someone who was somebody who taught English. And both of them said something to the effect of, oh, my God, you need to write something better than that. She thought, better than that? But this is what I really want to write. So what she did with her coaching with Eric was that they came up with a mission statement for the novels that she was going to write. And her mission statement was what these novels were going to mean to young people, the difference they were going to create in young people's lives, how she was going to feel in writing these novels. And she had that mission statement up above her computer so that whenever she felt like she was losing focus, she was losing energy, she was losing the motivation, she could go back to that mission statement as a constant reminder.
Brilliant.
So that was the way she held the intention around her writing.
I love that example. That's great. I think writing a mission statement in terms of setting your intention and purpose is a fabulous way to kind of clarify your objectives and your outcome. And that's very, very important. I really love that. Thank you for sharing that. Good. Yeah. Okay. So what
and,
about...
And, you know, we can do that for our own work as well.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. I mean, certainly, with my clients, we start off by setting, being clear about the motivation for wanting to write in the first place, and also setting objectives and outcomes so that you know where you're heading with your writing and what you're kind of aiming for, really. And and I love the idea of actually encapsulating that into an actual mission statement, which you could use for each individual article that you write, even as well as your book and your writing in general. You could use that at lots of different levels, can't you?
Definitely. And I think this leads us on very well to the third principle, because really this is what deep writing is about. It's not just about, you know, the fact that you want to be a published writer, or you want to be and you don't have to be published to be a writer. And that's something I feel really strongly about.
Yeah.
But it takes us to a place of really thinking about why we want to write. And I think that's where we really honour the principles of deep writing, because you're actually saying, I'm not just doing this because I want to have commercial success or I want people to know who I am. There's a deeper intention behind your writing. And the third principle then extends this, because it's about making choices. In a way, it's about, you know, honouring the fact that we are committed to writing deeply, but that also we're keeping an eye on bringing our deep writing and framing our work strategically to the commercial market. So we're saying, how can I ensure that this writing that is a reflection of my intention, my mission statement, my authentic voice, what I really want to say, and all of this is embracing my depth as a writer, how can I then make this attractive, meet the needs of the market? So you're not losing, you're not selling out your commitment and your depth as a writer, but you're saying, how can this fit into the marketplace as well? And I think this is something that often as writers we struggle with, because, you know, most authors don't actually make a living just by writing.
No.
They do other things. Yeah. You know, I'm a coach and I'm a trainer, and I do those things as well as write.
Yeah.
And those things also feed into my writing as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, to believe that you're just going to make your living by being a writer, you probably won't do that unless you're a really top best-selling author. And even then, you know, they still often have their hands in other things.
Yeah, very much so.
So, you know, it's about, you know, what are the choices that I have to make? And actually asking yourself these questions.
Mm.
And, you know, what Eric is saying, you know, and I actually really agree with him on this, it's not either or. You know, it's actually, I think it's about keeping those questions alive.
Yeah.
And I've seen it for myself. I mean, I wrote Soul Purpose primarily because I had a story to tell. And I felt it was really important to tell that story. But I also wrote it at the time when there was a market, there was an audience who wanted to hear those stories.
Mm.
They wanted to hear those stories because they wanted to hear stories that were reflections of their own stories. They wanted to hear how other writers, how other women had overcome particularly difficult, challenging, traumatic periods and experiences in their own lives. So the two actually worked well together.
And that's really lovely, because it kind of reflects one of my favourite sayings on this subject, which is that it takes two to speak the truth, and one to talk and the other to hear. And I really love that, because it's this combination that you're talking about. It doesn't have to be either or, it's both. It's your truth and expressing your truth and sharing that with the world, and also being aware that there are two parts to the process. It's the people who want to hear your story or hear your message. And those two things combined are very important, and certainly for writers who want to be commercially published, it's a perspective that needs to be held in balance throughout the whole of the writer's journey, which is, for me, the inclusive of the writing process itself, and all the way through, actually, on the path to publication. So it's holding that balance all the way through, so that you remain in integrity with your own writing, whilst also, if you want to be commercially published, having a perspective of what the audience, what the market, and what the readers want to actually hear from you. So that's fabulous on that one. What about principle number four?
Principle number four is honouring the process. And in a way, we've touched on this a bit earlier in the call when we talked about the different stages and the different cycles of the writing process. And this is really the principle that calls us to acknowledge the complexity of the writing process, that there are all these different stages. There is the birthing stages, there is the fallow season, there is the incubation, there is the process of coming to the place of where you are ready to let your writing go. There is that stage of where your ideas are beginning to take seed and be planted on the page. It's about acknowledging and honouring that these are all the stages and cycles of the creative and writing process. And that as writers, we need to be aware of those and we need to honour those processes.
And go with the flow, perhaps, is another phrase that fits in there.
Yeah, and do not be, you know, don't be thrown off course when, you know, it's not all about, you know, your writing flowing and it all making sense. You know, sometimes I have to put my work aside or a particular piece that I'm working with, and then I come back to it, and then I relook at it, and I come back to it fresh, and I come back to it often much more kinder and much more compassionate to the work. And, you know, that is part of knowing your craft. In a way, that's why, you know, apprentices worked with masters, because they learnt about the different cycles and the seasons that a master is willing to weather in order to become the master.
Indeed.
And in a way, that is what is being asked as a writer. It's not just about turning up on the page and you know, blowing yourself away when you've got a shitty first draft and you're thinking, well, this doesn't look like a polished, perfect piece. You're saying, no, you stay the course. And a lot of people get blown off at the first hurdle because they haven't understood that it is about staying the course.
Yes.
That this is not, you know, all about the peaks. This is about the troughs as well. This is about the valleys. But we can learn to navigate our way through those valleys.
Lovely.
And that's something I've really valued about the writing process.
Wonderful.
There is value in the valley.
Yeah, definitely.
Like a book by Yandla, Value in the Valley.
Oh, lovely. So let's move on to principle five, if I may, just keeping an eye on the time here.
Yes. So let's go through. Principle number five is befriending the work. And I think this is absolutely crucial. And this is where, instead of, you know, us listening to the critic, the censor, that voice that is pulling the work apart, this is where we step up and we take charge. We become the friend, the guardian, the mentor, the guide to our work. This is where we talk to our work kindly. This is where we lavish compassion on our work. This is where we have constructive conversations about the characters in our stories, in our fiction. This is where we ask the right kind of questions that will inspire and empower our work to reveal different ways of taking the work forward. And I think this is such an important stage in the writer's growth and development, about really valuing your work, not waiting for other people to come along and tell you that, oh, that's a great piece of writing, but really taking, and it's almost like you're treating your work like it's a child that is precious. You have got in your hand something that is precious that needs you to be kind and compassionate to it. And that's where that's the process of the principle of befriending the work.
Lovely.
And from that place, you are much better to step from that platform of befriending to the work to the platform of evaluating the work. I noticed in the past that I often would, you know, I said earlier that I would write a piece and not want to come back to it. That often meant I didn't want to value the work. I didn't want to read the work. I didn't want to revise it. I didn't want to edit it. I didn't want to see what was missing from the piece. Because often when you go back to evaluate the work, you can very quickly distinguish what is missing from the writing. So it's almost like I'd go back at, you know, it's like going back to the work and you've only got one eye open and you're kind of half squinting and half looking at it. But this is about, you know, taking a deep breath and saying, right, now I've generated this. What I want to do is take this work I want to move it to a place where it's at a better piece of writing. I'm saying what I mean. I'm finding the right words to illustrate my point. The story is going in the direction that I want it to go in. The evaluating the work is such a crucial and valuable point, and often a defining moment in the work, the writer moving from the place of generating the writing to now working the work. This is the belly of the work.
And this is principle number six, isn't it, Jackie?
This
evaluating
is principle
the work.
Number six,
yeah,
evaluating the work. And, you know, this is where often the slog around the writing happens. And, you know, this is where you often pull out the jewels in your writing. I actually now get very excited around evaluating my work, because this is where I, you know, take things out of it, bring new things in. I'm often sitting there with a blank sheet of paper, writing down things that I might need to go away and research, get clear about, refine what I'm writing. I actually find it a very, very fertile, exciting part of the process.
Just one thing, if I may add to that, that the importance of actually separating this out from the creative first draft stage. It's something that you would leave time and space between doing your first draft and doing your initial creative writing. You need to have a little bit of time and space, don't
yeah.
you, in between doing that and then coming back with a fresh perspective to do this evaluation that you're describing for us.
That's very important, because often if you leap back onto the work, you're going to be very critical of it. And also, you haven't given your writing time to work itself out. In a way, it's like compost. Your material, writing material, needs time to create the compost, you know, fertilize and have all those rich nutrients that become much more apparent and much more visible to you, both to your visibility and to your auditory tones, when you actually have distance and time away from the work. So it's a really important part. Mm. A lot of writers make a mistake of trying to write and then edit or to evaluate the work, and it is very important to have that distance between the two.
Great, okay.
And then the final principle is doing what's required, and that's really honouring everything that we've talked about in the other seven principles, which is about, you know, turning up, doing the writing, having writing as your practice, which is about capturing ideas, getting fit for the journey. You know, this is a journey. This does require us to have staying power. It does require us to have energy.
Yes.
It does require us to take care of ourselves. It does require us to be willing to make a mess, to be willing to make mistakes. It does require that, in spite of everything that is going on in our lives, is that we're willing to write in the middle of everything.
Mm.
You know, you can write between taking care of the children. You can write between having to get dinner ready. You can write between, you know, having to deliver a training course. You can write in between having to travel across one end of London to another. It's all totally possible.
And it really kind of comes down to three words, doesn't it, really? It's just do it.
You just have to do it. You know, how could Nike have run off with that slogan when it is so relevant to so many different aspects of our lives, particularly the writing life?
Yeah.
You know, the writing practice is exactly that. It is just do it, regardless of the blocks, regardless of what's going on in your life. It's like, give yourself permission to just turn up. It doesn't have to be a long time, but just give yourself that permission to honour your writing, honour your creativity, and honour yourself.
Lovely. Okay, well, I'd love to kind of talk more about those principles, because I think they all make so much sense for all creative people, actually, and certainly for writers and the writing process. So we don't have time, sadly, to carry on talking about that. So I'm going to move us on then to our final technique, the fifth technique, which is all about wrapping up your writing. So we just really have a minute or two just to talk about this one, Jackie. And this is such an important point, which is like knowing when to and how to bring your writing to close and when to stop. Mm-hmm. So what would be your kind of top tips on this technique?
I would say very quickly is to give yourself a timed schedule for when you're going to write your pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that really, really helps. Rather than just thinking, I want to write a novel, I've got the rest of my life to do it, actually say, I want to write the first draft of my novel within the next 3 months. It's possible. It has been done. Some people are going to take 6 months to a year, but you might find just setting yourself that target is going to be enough to just get you going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So give yourself a time span. The same with articles, essays. You know, you can give yourself a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but, you know, just give yourself a schedule to create the work in. Write as many drafts as you can for shorter pieces. I find that really helpful. It's very rare that a piece comes out completely whole. It does happen occasionally, and there's not a lot that I have to do to a piece. I'll never forget a piece I submitted for an anthology that the editor came back to me a year after it was published, and she said to me, Jackie, do you know when I received your piece on my desk? It was clean. It read well. I had to do hardly anything to it. It was an absolute joy.
Lovely.
And I remember that that piece had been worked through in my mind quite a lot before it, I got it down on the page.
Mm.
But, you know, give yourself the time to kind of have those drafts, because I actually think you will arrive at a better piece of writing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So give yourself as many drafts as possible. I find it helpful to keep a checklist of what you want to include in the piece, and once you've got those things included in the piece, draw a line under it. I think it's always useful to have your closing point, your point of closure, when you want to have the piece finished by, because I think that gets your adrenaline going and that kind of gets you there.
Yes.
And it gets you to have something. It gets you to have something concrete that is finished and complete. And the truth is, a piece of writing is never complete. We can always go back to it.
Yes.
You know, if I think of my book, you know, I think, oh my God, you could have said so much more. You could have added this, you could have added that. That's always going to be happen. That's your next piece of writing. That doesn't have to be that one. That's your next piece of writing. Get your list down. Do your mind map. Do your brainstorming.
Yes.
Use that to think about how you might write future pieces.
And that's a really important point, actually, because something that many writers feel is that they want to get everything all in their first book or in one book. And of course, you don't have to do that. You can remember that you're so right to say to really target your ideas and what you want to include and work with a deadline and so on, and then know that you can capture any brilliant ideas to use for future projects. They haven't all got to go in the one place, whether it be an article or a book or a chapter or a section, whatever it is that you're working on. So wonderful. Well, look, thank you, Jackie. We're kind of out of time now, so I'm going to have to draw it to a point where I'd like to just invite you to offer any kind of closing thoughts to leave with everybody, just kind of final tips or closing thoughts, just to kind of sum up what we've been saying so far.
So my closing thoughts are, don't try these techniques, do these techniques. Because by doing them, you will create a writing practice. And creating a writing practice means that inevitably your writing is going to get better. And that means that you will begin to craft your stories, you will begin to write your essays, you will begin to write your articles, and you will move yourself to completed pieces. And that's going to make you feel better, and that will inspire you to write more and more. So get writing.
Fabulous.
Best of luck.
That's lovely. Jackie, thank you so much. I would so love to kind of carry on talking to you for hours on this subject. You have such a wealth of knowledge and experience to share with us, and I really, really appreciate all the immensely valuable information that you've given us all. So thank you so much. And just to remind everybody that if you would like to contact Jackie directly, you can email her at jackieholder@aol.com. And if you'd like to see any more information about the coaching courses and classes that I offer, you can see that on my website at julianmccutcheon.com. So thanks very much, Julia. Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you, Jackie, for joining us. And thanks to everybody for joining us on the call. And I hope to hear you on the next Ask the Author call, which is in fact going to be temporarily renamed as Ask the Agent, because I'm delighted to announce that I'll be interviewing experienced literary agent Simon Trewin from one of the largest and most highly regarded literary agencies in the UK, and that's PFD, Peters Fraser and Dunlop, on the topic of how to make the perfect pitch to agents. So for anyone who doesn't yet have an agent but would like to find one, it's certainly going to be an interview not to be missed, I would say. So in the meantime, have a great couple of months. That next interview is on September the 27th. And once again, Jackie, thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to say goodbye to everybody. Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.